This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Adam. Welcome back to the Adam Schefter podcast as we enter a quieter time on the NFL calendar. Of course, it's never fully quiet in the NFL, but it is quieter at this point in the year, and we appreciate that. This week, we will be joined by the man who ran the New England Patriots draft, Elliot Wolf. Does not yet have the title as the Patriots' full-time general manager, but at some point this offseason, that is likely to be the case with him getting that full-time appointment and New England adding to their front office as they've begun to reach out and interview other candidates to assist Elliot Wolf as the Patriots move into the future with the quarterback that Elliot Wolf helped draft, Drake May from North Carolina. And Elliot, of course, grew up in Green Bay, the son of the former great Packers general manager, Ron Wolf. And he's got stories to share about Packers past drafts and this Patriots past draft. But first, we're going to be joined by my friend, my colleague, the co-host of the weekly six-pack and the co-host of the Fancy Focus podcast, Daniel Dopp, for this week's six-pack.
Thank you very much, Adam Schefter. Topic number one for this week, we talked about the NFL draft being in my hometown, right, in Detroit. They absolutely crushed it. 775,000 fans. Let's look ahead to next year because the draft was so much fun this year, Adam. It's going to be in Green Bay. What is Green Bay doing to make sure that they can prepare for a potential event like Detroit had this year?
I'm still trying to grasp and process how Green Bay is going to host a draft and how everybody's going to descend upon this city. I know they do it for Packers games, but where are all the players going to be staying in hotel rooms? Where are NFL officials going to be staying in hotel rooms? Again, this happens, but you know what? What occurred to me is, I guess there are people that could stay in Appleton. There are people who could stay in Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is, Daniel, hosting the Republican National Convention July 15th to July 18th. And in a way, it is a little bit of a warm-up for what the state will be encountering next spring. And it's the start of what is probably one of the more significant times that Wisconsin has had, right? A Republican National Convention followed by the draft in April. So in a 10-month span or whatever it may be, that's a huge time for the state of Wisconsin. If they were hosting the Ryder Cup again or doing something like that, that would be really cool and it would kind of complete it all. But I would also think that Republican National Convention is a little bit of a walkthrough on the draft, even though it's in Milwaukee and the draft is in Green Bay, but there is some connection and it's a huge time for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. You would think they'd be able to get a little bit in there and understand how to be able to navigate some of those structures. All right. Topic number two, Adam Schefter. Let's stay in Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers president and CEO Mark Murphy is going to formally retire in 2025. I wanted to ask you some of the names that we may hear as a part of this new search for new president and CEO.
Well, it's a big job and Mark Murphy's done a really good job, but he has to step aside and they have somebody working in the Green Bay Packers front office by the name of Ed Policy. Interestingly enough, son of Carmen Policy. And Ed Policy's got a great reputation around the National Football League. And when you speak to people about him, it certainly seems like he would be the natural successor to Mark Murphy. I think Ed Policy is the favorite to be the successor to Mark Murphy. He is the Green Bay Packers chief operating officer and general counsel now. So when you have a position that lofty and you have the reputation that Ed Policy does, to me, it only figures that he becomes the leader in the clubhouse to become the president of the Green Bay Packers. But I do think they're going to consider other names, most notably Jason Wright of the Washington Commanders. That's a name that I think will be on the Packers radar, somebody that they're going to be considering going forward. I think that they're going to be considering a guy like Sashi Brown from the Baltimore Ravens front office. I think he'll get some consideration. And there's a guy in the Rams front office, guy who does a great job, Tony Pastores, who has a lot of family connections to Green Bay, who certainly is worthy of being in consideration. I think the organization will wind up taking a look at him as well. But Ed Policy, to me, is the favorite for that job. But I can see Jason Wright. I can see Sashi Brown. I can see Tony Pastores. And let's see what the Packers decide to do here moving forward.
Love it. All right, topic number three, Adam Schefter. You may or may not know this, but I am deep into UFL content right now, and the kickers have just been crushing it in the UFL. And there's actually a handful of NFL teams, as you know, Adam, that could use kickers. The Los Angeles Rams, one of them that missed 16 kicks last year, went out. They signed, drafted a kicker out of Stanford. I want to ask you about Josh Cardy, the kicker that is signed by the Los Angeles Rams.
Well, how about this, right? The Rams, as you mentioned, Daniel, they missed 16 kicks last year. That is the second most that any team has missed this century. Since 2000, the team that had the most was the 2001 Steelers. They missed 17 kicks back in the 2001 season. Their kicker was Chris Brown. He was replaced, of course, for the 2002 season by the veteran Todd Peterson, who was injured and replaced by Jeff Reed in week 12. And Reed went on to kick for the Steelers for about 8 years and have a very successful career. Well, the Rams, after missing 16 kicks, recognized that they had to have a new kicker. And so they identified Josh Cardy from Stanford as the guy they wanted all along. And as soon as there was a kicker drafted in the draft, a few slots before him, Rams didn't waste any more time. They got the guy they wanted. And I think they're banking on the fact that even with the great season they had last year, went to the playoffs, surprised people, won more games than people expected. They did that with all those missed kicks. And the irony is that of those 16 kicks, none of them really ever decided a game. But in this particular case, it's a big number. It's why they drafted Josh Cardy and why they made a little bit of history last year with the 16 kicks, which was the second worst of any team this entire century. It's quite a little factoid there.
Yeah, that's crazy. I would have never guessed they missed 16 kicks last year. That's unreal. Yeah. All right, Adam, topic number four. Draft is over. Free agency is over. That means I'm waiting for one thing. It's schedule release to know my team is playing everyone else. When are we going to get it?
Daniel, it's Tuesday morning, 8:30 as we tape this. Okay?
Yep.
I would have thought that we would have been getting it Thursday, May 9th. Everybody would have thought Thursday, May 9th. It's settled into this pattern of the second Thursday in May, post-draft. That seems to be in recent years when we've gotten the schedule most often. But I can't believe that the league hasn't announced the release date of the schedule just yet as we are recording this podcast. Now, I still think this Thursday is going to be possible, but I would be surprised if we didn't get word today, okay, that the release date is going to be this date, Thursday, or next week. Now we're at the point where you wonder if it's going to bleed into next week. And here's the thing. You say, well, what does it matter, the schedule release date? There are people, football fans across the country, waiting to plan weddings, weekends away, trips to go see their team, book hotel. Like, everybody's waiting for this schedule to be released so they could kind of put plans into motion for the fall and winter. And everything is on hold right now until Roger Goodell approves the schedule. So, Daniel, if it's okay here, I'd like to make my personal plea to Roger. Just pick the date already. Just give us the date so we can get ready to announce this and give us the schedule so we can make our plans. Like, we know who teams are playing. And this is the latest NFL project that has taken on a life of its own, like the combine, like the offseason, like OT, like everything. It becomes bigger than it is. We know all the games. We just don't know the dates and times of the games. And now we'll get ready to do that moving forward here. Hopefully the league gives us some clarity. Hopefully we get that clarity soon. And again, that's a plea to Roger Goodell. It's a plea to the new scheduling czar, Mike North, who has been a frequent guest on this podcast. And I would expect he will come on this podcast again once the schedule's coming out, because he's very good and we'd love to hear his insights on the schedule. But let's get this done. Let's get this moving here, Daniel. Let's start looking ahead to 2024.
I'm with you. Let's get this moving. I'm ready to know who I'm going to be playing, who I'm going to be looking for. Do I have to buy a plane ticket, Adam, to go watch my team play somewhere? I'm in on that. All right, topic number five. I want to talk about J.J. McCarthy. Obviously, Michigan guy. You're a Michigan guy. I grew up in Michigan, grew up close to the Detroit Lions. I found out that JJ McCarthy, though, Adam, is a Bears fan. Not only is a Bears fan, he was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. What's going on with JJ McCarthy in the NFC North right now?
Well, that's the funny part about it, right? When we sat down with him in Ann Arbor last month and he talked about being from Illinois and growing up a Bears fan, the idea came up about what it would be like to be drafted by the Minnesota Vikings.
What would it be like for you to wind up in Minnesota? What would come to mind if I said to you, you're going to be a Viking, JJ?
It would be in the world just because Coach O'Connell, he's a guy that, you know, I'd run through a brick wall for. Everything that he wants to do with his football team is something that I want to be a part of. And obviously being the NFC North, being a Bears fan my entire life and being able to play at Soldier Field and stay in the Midwest and all that good stuff would be just a dream come true. But, yeah, I love what they're building. Obviously, the weapons there are limitless, and, you know, they got just a great thing going for them, so it would be a blessing to be a part of it.
Could you be a Bears fan your entire life and then go play for the Vikings?
I can. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, with smiles, for sure.
And now he gets to go up against the Bears twice a year. Now he gets to go up against the Bears as the Vikings quarterback of the future. He gets to go home every year, and it won't be hard for him to turn his allegiance, despite the fact that he was a huge Bears fan growing up and now be the man of the Vikings. But JJ McCarthy gets to stay in the NFC North. And it's funny how that game, I'm sure, will always mean something to him. It's not like the Bears really bypassed him and showed more respect. Everybody knew Caleb Williams was going number one, but he'll always remember, you know, they had a pick in front of him. We'll see how that works out. And he'll get a couple of cracks a year at the Chicago Bears for the years to come, Daniel, which should be a fun little storyline to track moving forward.
Oh, yes, it will. Yes, it will. All right, let's close this one out. Adam Schefter, topic number six of our weekly six pack. I want to ask you about the draft situation with the Atlanta Falcons and Michael Penix. Is there a chance that that could have played out differently on draft day?
You know, here's the funny thing about this, and I just want to show you how one move always leads into another, right? Jim Harbaugh was in Los Angeles, and he was waiting to see whether he could get a deal done with the Chargers. And if he couldn't, he was getting on the plane to go to Atlanta, and the Falcons were definitely interested in hiring Jim Harbaugh. Now, who knows whether or not they would have gotten a deal done? But I remember during the offseason when it came up that Harbaugh would have interest in both the Chargers and the Falcons jobs, amongst others. I remember the conversation, okay, well, if he goes to Los Angeles, it's obvious. Justin Herbert is his quarterback. But why would he choose Atlanta over LA when LA's got the quarterback? Well, because the Falcons are going to have a top 10 pick, and then Jim Harbaugh could go use his pick on JJ McCarthy. And it turns out that the Falcons had the number 8 pick. JJ McCarthy went number 10 to the Vikings. So just think about if Jim Harbaugh had made the decision to opt for the Falcons job over the Chargers job. Imagine he had left the Chargers building that January day in an attempt to go meet with the Falcons for a second time to finalize the deal with Atlanta. Well, then Atlanta would not have been on Michael Penix. Atlanta would have been on JJ McCarthy. And I would say that they probably would have not signed Kirk Cousins in free agency, because they knew they were going to get JJ McCarthy, and they could have been ultra aggressive about trading for JJ McCarthy. And JJ McCarthy would not have the opportunity to go up against his hometown Bears team, but would be the future quarterback of the Falcons. And it's really not far-fetched at all to think that, because that's really what we're talking about. If Jim Harbaugh were going to take the Falcons job, he was going to do it with the idea in mind that they would find a way to procure JJ McCarthy, which would not have been difficult to do from the 8 hole. They could have traded up and made sure that JJ McCarthy would have been theirs. In fact, he probably would have traded up to 4 or 5 and locked in JJ McCarthy to make sure. It just goes to show you again, Jim Harbaugh decides on the Chargers instead of the Falcons. But if he had gone to the Falcons, Kirk Cousins might have stayed in Minnesota.
Right.
And then the Falcons would be taking JJ McCarthy. So there's always like these little things that turn out to be big things with one simple move, one simple decision. It has ripple effects. And the ripple effect of Harbaugh opting for the Chargers over the Falcons impacted Kirk Cousins, and J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix and allowed all these other factors to unfold to become really what turned out to be the biggest draft story of all. All right, another team that made headlines. All right, another team that made headlines during the draft was the New England Patriots. And the man that ran their war room was Elliott Wolf. And Elliott Wolf still does not have the full-time title of being the Patriots general manager. We do think at some point this offseason he officially will get that title, having selected the Patriots quarterback of the future in Drake May. But Elliott Wolf helped run the Patriots draft, and he has a unique background, having grown up the son of the legendary general manager Ron Wolf, having him execute the Packers draft. And Elliott's going to share a story, Daniel, here, that takes us back to the draft in 1996, when the Green Bay Packers held the 27th overall pick, and they were focused in on a linebacker from Miami. And the week before the draft, Ron Wolf sent the Packers scout, John Dorsey, who later went on to go draft Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City with the help of others, but he sent John Dorsey to Florida for a private workout with Ray Lewis. And Dorsey left Florida and was completely wowed by Ray Lewis. The Packers were planning to take Ray Lewis with the 27th overall pick in the 1996 draft and actually had him on the phone, as Elliott Wolf is going to, had him on the phone telling him they were going to turn in his name, when lo and behold, one pick before them, the Baltimore Ravens at number 26 chose Ray Lewis. And as we talk about football history being different, there's another example of it. One simple pick apart. Can you imagine if Ray Lewis had gone to the Green Bay Packers and what that would have been like in history? Their defense would have been incredible. He would have taken over for George Kuntz at that time, and their defense would have had Reggie White and Ray Lewis with Leroy Butler playing the secondary. Like, wow. Wow, that would have been unbelievable. But anyway, that gets us to a man who grew up in the Packers war room, who ran the Patriots war room, the Patriots personnel executive, Elliott Wolf. So, Elliott, you are the son of the former Packers general manager, Ron Wolf, one of the great all-time GMs, and you grew up around war rooms. Do you remember the first time you ever stepped foot into one of those rooms there, Elliott?
I do. It was actually a lot of fun. It was the 1993 draft, and the Packers had already picked. And I got there after the Packers had picked, and they were getting ready. They traded back into the first round and drafted a safety named George Teague from Alabama. And, you know, he played a long time. He was a good player. But, you know, just kind of being around the buzz of a team that traded back into the first round, I was like, oh, this is exciting. I was, I think, 11.
And what do you remember about them trading back and that feeling of excitement that you felt at the age of 11?
It was just a player that my dad coveted. You know, my dad was, he was pretty cool. Like, so he'd go out scouting in the fall and he would come back in like September and be like, this is like, he would name a player. George Teague was one of them. This is a guy we're going to draft. And then, you know, to kind of see that come to fruition, he did that several times throughout the years. It would be like early in the season, like, you know, after one game, maybe we're going to draft this guy. And then he would do it.
Who else stands out on that list that you remember him talking about the Packers drafting?
Ross Verbo was one. Picked in the first, guard from Iowa, picked in the first round. John Michaels was one, tackle from USC. Now, that one didn't work out. That's actually an interesting story because they were getting ready to draft Ray Lewis. And Baltimore picked him. Right before, you know, the pick before, and then they ended up picking John Michaels. So he got his prediction right, but it would have been a lot better to get Ray Lewis.
Well, hold on. So the Packers would have taken Ray Lewis if he were available and he went right before them?
The pick before.
And were you in the war room to watch the proceedings surrounding that?
I was.
And what do you remember about that?
There was some disappointment because they actually had Ray on the phone. They were talking to Ray and Baltimore was still on the clock. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what do you remember about that disappointment and then being on the phone with him?
just, you know, like they thought Ray was one of the best players in the draft. I mean, there were, you know, there were games where Ray had like 20 tackles. And, you know, I know that's easy to say now. He's one of the best linebackers of all time, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer, all that. But, you know, he was kind of seen as an undersized middle linebacker back in the day. And, you know, he wasn't what we know as Ray Lewis now. So Baltimore obviously got a good one.
That's unbelievable. You ever stop to think how football history would have been different if Ray Lewis had been spending his career in Green Bay rather than Baltimore, Elliot?
It would have been pretty awesome. not for Baltimore.
Let me ask you a question. Were you also in the room when the Green Bay Packers selected Aaron Rodgers, I believe, correct?
I was working for the Packers at that point. I wasn't just a fly on the wall.
And what do you remember about that selection?
So what I remember about that selection is more the week leading up to it. There were some rumors, you know, it was Alex Smith and Aaron Rodgers, and one of them was going to go one to San Francisco. And then we started to hear rumors the week of that, well, none of these teams in between need a quarterback. He might actually, like, whoever it is might slide. And of course, everyone expected the 49ers were going to pick Alex Smith, which they did. So I just remember going in the draft room. And I think this was when the draft was still Saturday and Sunday. It was either Thursday or Friday. And Ted Saturday Thompson Sunday, was in there. Yeah. Ted Thompson was in there watching every game of Cal's offense. And he was in there by himself. And I would pop in to do whatever I needed to do in there work-wise. And, you know, I'd kind of look up at the screen. And, you know, you could tell he wanted to be alone. And you knew who he was watching. And, you know, he kind of came out of there and, you know, smile on his face. You know, little Ted Thompson half smile on his face. And I kind of figured that we might be picking Aaron Rodgers if he was there, you know, and he certainly, you know, the slide he did is well documented. You know, it really worked out for the Green Bay Packers and for him.
And what stood out to you about Aaron's time in Green Bay while you were there and he was there?
Yeah. So, you know, I have a good relationship with Aaron, even though he's a divisional enemy now. You know, His first year was my second year in the NFL. So we kind of came up together. And, you know, he was a backup for, you know, 3-4 years, just wanting to get on the field, And that's kind of how I felt as a scout, you know, wanting to do more. You know, he's obviously taken the most of his opportunities and, you know, he's certainly a Hall of Famer as well. And, you know, we look forward to kicking his ass this year.
That's very good. You didn't get a chance to kick his ass last year, right?
No, we didn't. No, when they came up here, I had a chance to speak to him before the game, and it was good to catch up with him.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
How would you assess the way that your draft went last week?
I think it went pretty well. We're a process-driven group, and the process was pretty good with the coaches, the medical staff, the scouts, obviously. You know, for the most part, we were all on the same page and got on the same page, you know, before the decisions were being made. So that made it a lot easier. And the board fell pretty well for us in terms of some of the positions that we needed to acquire.
When you say the board fell pretty well for you, what stands out about that, Elliot?
You know, there were some runs on certain positions, and you know, we were certain positions where we had needs, and we were still able to get players that we wanted, that we targeted at those positions, even though the board was getting pretty thin at those spots.
Now, your first pick, obviously, there's a run on quarterbacks, two quarterbacks before you. You get Drake May. Right. What stood out to you about Drake May?
I think just the talent and the person. He's a great person. He's tough. He's gritty. He was productive. He elevated those around him. And then, you know, he's 6'4 and a half, 225 pounds. He can really throw the ball. He's athletic. I think a combination of those things, you know, we think there's a lot to develop there with him whenever that time may be.
Elliot, how long into the process did you realize that that would be the quarterback that you would be zeroing in on, who was likely going to be your selection?
Yeah, you know, kind of throughout the spring process, you know, we were fortunate enough to, you know, if you have to pick high, I guess you have to pick, it's fortunate enough to pick high in a year where there's those guys available. And, you know, there were several players available that we liked. And, you know, as the process went along in the spring, we were pretty sure that Drake was going to be the guy, and obviously felt comfortable with that and excited about that, especially the more and more time that we were able to spend with him.
When there are, what's, before we get to that, when you spend time with him, what stood out about him?
His character, his passion for football, his drive. He's an all-around good person. He's really tough. He's all football, comes from a good family. Just, you know, I could go on and on about this guy. And, you know, those things will move forward with us. And you know, he's a younger person. And, you know, as he assimilates into our locker room, I think our players will, you know, will rally around him.
And did knowing that there were two teams that were interested in trading up to your spot, presumably to draft him, make you feel even better about your evaluation of him at all?
You know, that's one way to look at it. Obviously, you know, some of the teams are pretty good offensive teams with pretty good offensive minds. But we feel like we're a pretty good offensive minded team as well. And, you know, we were trusting in our own evaluations.
And how close did you ever come to trading that number three pick?
Not close.
I got a text the day of the draft from somebody in your organization. And I said, what are the chances you trade that pick? And the response I got back was zero chance.
That is accurate.
That is accurate.
Yeah. I mean, we were listening throughout the process. We weren't stringing these teams along. It just, no one ever, like, the opportunity to pick Drake superseded anything that anyone offered.
And was there one offer ever along the way that even made you think for a moment, Elliot, that it was so rich? Because there's been speculation out there that the Vikings offered three ones. There are two ones this year and a one next year.
There was really nothing, you know, there was nothing out there that really made us come off our plan.
And was drafting Drake, was that related in any way to your team signing a veteran like Jacoby Brissett during the offseason? And how do these two particular quarterbacks complement one another?
Yeah, so we were very upfront with Jacoby. Obviously, Jacoby's a player that had some history here before. I have a history with Coach Parcells. Coach Parcells has a history with Jacoby as well. So, you know, I've been hearing about Jacoby for years. And he's a good player. We played against him 2 years ago when he was with the Browns. And, you know, we had the opportunity to bring him in. We were very upfront with him about the role. You're going to, you know, we're likely going to draft a quarterback at some point in the draft. And how do you feel about that? And are you willing to compete with somebody like that? And, you know, Jacoby's a guy that's played a lot of football, and he's a relentless preparer. By all that, all those that have worked with him say that, like, this guy really knows how to prepare. He took that from Brady. And we're excited about, you know, his ability in the room to help whoever the young guy is. And, you know, maybe that's while he's playing.
You know, you bring Jacoby Brissett back to New England. It's been a while since he's been there, but it did seem like there was a big emphasis for your team to re-sign some of your own players this offseason. Kyle Duggar, Mike Onwenu, Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, Anfernee Jennings, Josh Uche. Why was it so important to bring back some of your own players, Elliot?
Yeah, I think just kind of establishing a core here. You know, we had let some players walk in the past. I think it really just boils down for us to, you know, keeping good football players. Like, these guys are good football players. They were priorities for us. And, you know, we had the opportunity to keep them and, you know, not to overthink it. Let's just keep these guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You've had the chance to be around some great people. So I'm also curious what you learned from your time with Bill Belichick.
Where do I start? Never met anyone who loves football more than Coach Belichick. Listening to Coach Belichick just break down a few plays in a team meeting is one of the most rewarding experiences that I've had in the NFL. He sees things and talks about things that I never even would have thought of. And, you know, I had 15 years of experience when I got here, and just listen to the way he breaks down some of the most mundane football details and the perspective that he has on those things is unbelievable. I'll always cherish the time that we had together.
Did you have any contact with him leading up to the draft at all?
No, just, you know, a text here, there, just, you know, kind of good luck and stuff like that, but nothing in detail.
And between being around your dad, who's a Hall of Fame GM, and being around Bill Belichick, who's a Hall of Fame coach, is there anybody else that made a lasting mark with you during your formative years here before you became the head of New England's personnel department here, Elliot?
I mean, certainly Ted Thompson, you know, the former Packers GM, just his humility, the way he worked, the way he treated people is always something that I'll take with me and remember wherever I go. Some other guys that I learned a lot from: John Schneider with the Seahawks, Reggie McKenzie, who's now with the Dolphins, and John Dorsey, who's now with the Lions. Those are the personnel guys that kind of shaped and molded me and taught me a lot about the game, other than, you know, my dad and Coach Belichick.
And how do you assess your own situation now? Because the Crafts never gave you the official GM title, yet you helped run this draft for New England and help make a pick and many picks that are critical to the success, the long-term success of this franchise. What is it like to go through to be the head of a personnel department and not have a full-time general manager title?
Well, it was a collaborative effort on our part. You know, at the end of the day, someone needed to make the call, and the Crafts entrusted that to me for this, you know, for the spring here. And I'm grateful for that opportunity. But there are a lot of people that, you know, we're making the decisions along with me. Obviously Gerard, but Matt Groh, Alonzo Highsmith, Pat Stewart, Marshall Hoym, Richard Miller, Steve Cargyle. I mean, I could go on and on about these guys. But we all sat down together. Cam Williams is another one I don't want to forget. We all sat down together and, you know, worked together to set the board and create the board and make the best decisions possible for the Patriots.
But it was a collaborative process, yet you still are at the head of that process. So I'm curious what it was like for you to be in charge of a draft for the very first time, considering all these picks that you watched your dad make, all the players that he helped identify, all the things you got to witness growing up around this, for you to be in the spot that you were during this past
draft. Yeah. Okay. I got you. Yeah. I mean, I've been waiting my whole life for the opportunity. I feel like I was very prepared for it, been thinking about the moment forever. You know, having such little drama in the first round probably eased my nerves a little bit. But then, as I said earlier, like, the board fallen pretty well for us and able to pick guys we wanted, as opposed to just, well, I'll just take him, you know, that made it a lot easier. But it was a lot of fun, and it was a lot of fun again with the process, just working with Gerard and the coaching staff and all these people that were really helpful.
I'm curious how much work you did in the other quarterbacks, knowing that you had the third overall pick and the third choice of quarterbacks. How much work do you do on those guys?
Yeah, so we did work on, call it, the top six, you know, all six guys that went in the first round. We did extensive work on all those guys. spent a lot of time with all of them except one, and that was more of a scheduling issue than anything else. It was good to meet with all those guys. You know, people asked me throughout the process, you know, what's this guy like? What's that guy like? We had really positive experiences with all six of them. You know, top to bottom, they're all different, obviously. They all have strengths and weaknesses as players, but as people, we were really comfortable with all six guys. And, you know, it was kind of cool to see. And I think I said this at one of my press conferences earlier, like, they're all football guys and they're all tough guys. And that was really kind of neat to see all six of those guys go in the first round because they're such, you know, they're such talents.
Can I get a thought on each of those guys? I'm just curious what you thought of Caleb Williams first.
Yeah, just an immensely talented guy that, again, elevated his teammates. Kind of makes it look easy sometimes. And Chicago is probably very excited at this point.
Jaden Daniels?
Jaden's just a superb athlete. I thought he got a lot better in the pocket this year. Really enjoyed spending time with him. You know, just a dynamic athlete and a, you know, I would say underrated passer.
Underrated. J.J. McCarthy.
J.J., the thing that stands out about him, he's a winner. Obviously won the national championship this year, but, you know, going back to high school is, I mean, I don't have the exact number offhand, but like his record between high school and college is crazy. And, you know, his pro day was really indicative of some of the things he could do that he didn't show on film this year because, you know, they were such a run first team. His pro day was really impressive and his talent, I think, surprised some people.
He has a 61-3 record since high school, Elliot.
Not bad.
61-3. Michael Penix.
Michael's a guy that kind of grew on us throughout the process. Very talented passer. Played in a good offense there. I think he's another one where, you know, he showed some things at his pro day in terms of his athleticism that he didn't always show on film because he was he liked throwing the ball down the field. But he's another guy that spending more time with him became very comfortable with him in the process.
And the last guy, Bo Nix.
Yeah, Bo Nix. I call him a point guard. He's kind of a stand and deliver, catch and shoot guy. He's athletic. He's another one that improved a lot throughout the course of his career from Auburn to Oregon. And just it's kind of cool to see all six of those guys go in the first round. I think it's good for the league.
And after they had been off the board by pick 12, what did you think at that moment?
I thought that was good too, because it might push somebody else down. Cause obviously we weren't going to pick another quarterback that high. We did pick another quarterback.
What about that quarterback?
Joe Milton. I mean, Joe Milton was just, so I had the opportunity to watch Joe play live the last game of the year against Vanderbilt. And, you know, I got there really early and watched him warm up and just watched him throw the football is unbelievable. I mean, he's 6'5", 245 pounds. He's got a rocket for an arm. He's athletic. You know, he played in Heupel's offense there, which is not an NFL offense, but we feel like there's some things that we can work with and develop. It was just one of those picks where, you know, there was too much talent in him to pass that up.
Here's an interesting Joe Milton story. I was at a Jim Harbaugh golf tournament, a charity tournament in Ann Arbor. It had to be, I'm going to guess, 4 or 5 years ago. It would have been pre-pandemic. So I'm going to guess 5 years ago, it doesn't match up. But I remember being in this room where they were auctioning off a bunch of items for charity. And I was standing with Pep Hamilton, who was on the Michigan staff at the time. And we were talking about the current roster. And he told me at that time, and I never forgot it, that he thought Joe Milton could be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. That's how much talent he thought Joe Milton had. And I kept waiting for Joe Milton to pop at the NCAA level. And it never really happened. There was little rumblings about him, people aware of him, that rocket arm that you're talking about, but he never developed into that number one type of pick type guy. So for your organization to take a flyer on somebody like that, good for you, because there is a lot of talent if you guys can figure out a way to get that out of him and have him grow into all the capabilities that he has.
Yeah. And so in regards to that, and, you know, with Drake May as well, you know, having worked with Ben McAdoo, Alex Van Pelt before, and they learned from Mike McCarthy, I think Mike McCarthy is a great quarterback developer. You know, they have the quarterback school stuff that they did with McCarthy, and, you know, TC McCartney is our quarterback coach. They're going to sort of implement that stuff for these guys. And, you know, we'll see what they can do with them. But you know, having worked with those guys before made it easier and organizationally more confident to be able to take a raw guy like Joe.
And being that you have Joe and being that you have Drake, who some people say is a little ways away, does it make it easier to have a guy like Jacoby where there's no pressure to have to play one of these other guys right away?
100%. And, you know, we've spent time with Drake and Joe, but we haven't had a work day with them yet. They'll get in here next week. We'll gauge where they're at. We'll gauge where the coaching staff thinks they're at. And, you know, we know where Jacoby's at. He's been here working his tail off since the offseason program started. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Hey, Elliot, I want to thank you very much for the time today. I want to wish you luck with whatever is next. We'll see whatever that is. Congratulations on running your first NFL draft room, and I'm sure there are many more of those to come, and I appreciate your time today.
All right, thanks a lot, Adam. Take care.
And again, we mentioned, Daniel, the Patriots have begun to reach out to other candidates to interview them for the Patriots general manager job, but I think it's really more along the lines of reaching out to candidates to support Elliot Wolf, who probably is in line to become the next general manager of the New England Patriots. And what a background he has had and what a chance he's had to observe some of the great picks in NFL history, some of the great quarterbacks in Green Bay. And now he's hoping that Drake May can be that very same quarterback. All right, we have gotten back from Northwest Arkansas late night Monday night, Daniel. We flew to Northwest Arkansas with a number of ESPN friends, colleagues to celebrate the life of the incomparable Chris Mortensen. There was a celebration of life service held on Monday in Northwest Arkansas, and it was really a tremendous event. Chris Berman spoke at it. Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network analyst, who's very close with Mort, he spoke. I had the honor of speaking, and it was very touching, very moving. And the service closed with Mort's son, Alex Mortensen, giving just some incredibly thoughtful words, and his composure and poise blew me away. Like, he was far more composed and poised than I was, talking about his very own father. And that was impressive to watch. And it was a chance for everybody to just reflect on the life of Mort and what a life he had and how much he touched so many people. It is amazing. Everybody had versions of the same story. Him helping people, him reaching out to people, him supporting people, him uplifting people. Just that was Mort. And it was very sad on Monday, also very happy to look back at the life he had. And there's a lot that I'll always remember. It's also kind of weird and interesting to be in Arkansas. All of us loved him so much, and so few of us had ever been to where he lived in the offseason. He and his family moved to Arkansas when Alex played quarterback at Arkansas. They stayed in Arkansas. He had animals, horses on his farm, loved to take care of them. And it was, you know, stepping into a world that I had never had the opportunity to do before and go see where Mort was from. And that was awesome as well. So, but of course, lots of travel delays. And I don't know how Mort did that for 20 years going in and out of Arkansas that entire time, because all of our flights out of Northwest Arkansas were canceled on the way back and made for quite a travel situation coming back. Didn't get home till 2:30 in the morning on Monday night. But for Mort, of course, it was worth it. And Mort never complained about travel. All right, we want to thank Elliot Wolf for his time this week, for joining us to talk about previous Packers drafts and Patriots drafts. I want to thank Daniel Dodd for helping quarterback another six-pack. I want to thank my great producers, Christina Buswell, Sarah Abbott, for helping to run this podcast and making sure that it happens. And you, the listener, for tuning into another Adam Schefter podcast. Please join us again next week when hopefully, we have the NFL schedule. And hopefully, we'll be joined by Mike North. And hopefully, all this will happen and you all can make your plans for the upcoming football season. Let's all keep our fingers crossed that that is the case. Until then, have a great week, everybody. Be well and stay safe.